On episode 307 of the Tennis Files podcast, you'll learn the three-step process to play clutch during big points with Dr. Larry Lauer.
Witness history at Roland Garros, where old rivalries meet new talent on the clay battleground. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV live in HD. Experience 3 weeks of unparalleled access as the world's top players in tennis face off to see if the veterans maintain their dominance or if a fresh face rises to challenge them. Daily live coverage begins Monday, May 20th. Stream it now with Tennis Channel Plus to be there when it happens.
Welcome to the Tennis Files Podcast, bringing you advice from the top minds in tennis to help you improve your game. And now, here's your host, Mehrban Iranshad.
Hey there, I hope you're having a great week and that you're getting to play a lot of tennis and that you're improving your game step by step, day by day. And today's episode is about the three-step process to play clutch under pressure, which is a tough thing to do and something we all strive for. She reminds me of, fortunately, of a doubles match that I had with my partner Derek. We play in a government league, actually, and we were able to win in a third set tiebreak. Oddly enough, the tiebreak was only to 7 instead of 10, but we managed to pull that one out. And, you know, some of the principles that you hear about today helped us get through this one. So, and I'm really excited to present this interview for you that I did a while back because, you know, it's a step by step, three-step process framework, which is always really especially helpful for you. You know, it's something you can easily remember and then put into practice. So, and if you don't know about Dr. Larry Lauer, he is the mental skills specialist for USTA player development. Dr. Lauer earned a PhD in science, exercise, and sports psychology from the University of North Carolina at Greensboro. And he was also an assistant coach and mental coach for Michigan State men's tennis, helping the team reach the 2013 NCAA tournament. He was also a sports psychologist consultant for USA Hockey's national team development program. And importantly, as well, Dr. Lauer co-hosts the Compete Like a Champion podcast with Johnny Parks. So you should definitely check their podcast out. But yeah, definitely a very helpful discussion. And, you know, I was talking with a fellow tennis player 2 days ago, and they mentioned that they had seen some mental game advice on my Instagram page, actually, which you can check out. My handle there, I think, is at tennis.files, but something that they put into practice as well that helped. So definitely highly underrated. You know, it's the match that I played yesterday. It was very interesting because we played against a college player or probably a recent graduate and then an older player. And the younger player, he had great strokes, really powerful shots. But, you know, it's very interesting. He would talk negatively to himself almost every time he missed a shot. And he was pretty just, I don't know, not derogatory, but yeah, just super self-critical out loud. And it reminded me as well that there was a stat, I think, that Jeff Salzenstein from Tennis Evolution had mentioned in an earlier interview that I did on the summit where he said a spoken word out loud is like 10 times worse than one that is told to yourself internally. And then also a negative thought is more powerful than a positive thought in terms of remembering it. So that just, you know, piling it on. And, you know, unfortunately, fortunately for us, you know, the player did not perform so well during the big moments and we were able to. But, you know, all that aside to say that I think that this episode is going to be very helpful for you and very pivotal potentially if you can put it into practice. So without further ado, here is my interview with Dr. Larry Lauer.
Larry, thanks so much for coming on and really excited to talk to you about how to perform better in critical moments.
Thank you, Mervin. I'm excited to be here. We had a lot of fun last year, I think, and hopefully I can provide some useful advice, practical advice for your listeners again. So,
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Do you go by Dr. Lauer or Larry? What do you prefer? Should I ask you that?
You can go with Larry, since now we know each other this well. Some people, it's okay. Dr. Lauer, but nah, I'm just joking. Larry's fine.
Okay, thanks.
Depends on how you treat me.
Oh, no, no. I'll treat you with the utmost respect that you deserve, sir. Oh. But yeah, of course. But yeah, I'm excited to really get knowledge from you in this area, because as we were speaking about off air, I've been getting a lot of feedback from the summit participants on what they want to learn about, and it's almost like the mental game dominates. It's just so many players who say I don't perform well when pressure is upon me. They can't seem to win any tie breaks, things like that. So. I guess, what are the top couple concepts that players just want to be thinking about, when they're, maybe they're preparing or visualizing or whatever it is, about these tough moments? Because, a lot of us obviously have, scar tissue from not performing well, in these moments, things like that. So what should our mindset be?
Well, I think the mindset should be one of a growth mindset, where you're looking at how you're getting better. Because if you're getting better, then you have a chance to perform under pressure, right? If you're not improving, it makes it challenging to think that you're going to continue to perform. So I think it's a growth mindset. And, the fact that we hear so much about this side of the game, right, the mental side, goes to show just how important it is. I don't know how many times I talk to people about it and they're like, this is so important. I'm like, okay, so what do you do about it? Not much. Or I don't know what to do, which is also a big barrier, right? So that's why we have classes like this. But I think first and foremost, you want to start to develop an awareness about what's going on in those situations. Is your game changing? Are you making different decisions? Are you, during the point making different decisions, but also between points, are you changing? Are you going faster? A lot of people tend to rush themselves, especially on their serve. They tend, because you have more control of the pace, tend to rush themselves, maybe not fully have a game plan. Maybe they didn't fully recover from the last point. Your heart's beating out of your chest. This is where you've got to make sure you recover, you slow down, and develop a clear game plan. So you want to be aware of what's happening, though. I think that's the first step. Why is it different? Take down some notes. When I play well, when I don't perform well under pressure, what's different in my tennis, how I feel, how I'm thinking? And certainly, if you start to get some answers there, then you can get to the solution a lot quicker, right? Versus sort of grabbing at any old thing on the internet or some idea that I might give you. When you know what it is, then you have a better shot at resolving it. And once you have the awareness, I think you have to then develop your mental skill sets. If you're unable to focus for 2 minutes, on something, how is it you think you can go into a match and stay focused for an hour and a half, right? So developing your mental strengths, your mental skills, being able to focus for longer, being able to refocus more effectively. So how quickly do you get your focus back when you lose it? That's probably the most powerful skill we can have. And certainly, how do you talk to yourself in these situations? Are you your best friend? You like a doubles partner you like to play with? Or you're like a doubles partner nobody wants to play with? How would you characterize the way you're talking to yourself? What kind of goals do you set? Is your goal to avoid losing, or is it to play a certain way? Which typically we find that if your focus is on the process, how to play, you perform much better under pressure. So there's a lot of different ways to go on this topic. But in terms of mindset, just getting to it, you got to be aware of what's happening. Okay, so pay attention in those moments, reflect on it, learn from it. Make sure you're really developing your skill set so you're prepared for those moments to be able to focus and refocus well, talk to yourself in a good way, be really clear on your game, and set goals that really encourage a process mindset, because that is under your control, that tends to alleviate your anxiety. And we can get into the other things like breathing and routines, which I think we probably talked about a lot last year. But I think you got to have the awareness, you got to have the skill set, and really kind of start with that, with your goals as well.
Yeah, a lot of great stuff here. And I really enjoy the kind of the framework, the three steps that you've laid out here. I guess in particular, I want to ask about like the ability to focus for longer. So, I mean, what do you have your players do who kind of have trouble with this? And it's really tough these days, you know, with it's fascinating when you learn about like the effects of, you know, artificial dopamine, if that's the right term, but, you know, just from, you know, your phones and whatnot. And it's kind of like you lose focus very quickly. Whereas, especially in the past, we used to do tasks without all these electronics and then be able to focus for longer. So, I mean, what types of things do you have players do or even not do to help them focus for longer? And then also, I guess, refocusing, obviously, as you mentioned, is a arguably more important skill, how to do that as well.
Yeah, at this point in time of this video, people are probably already on to another window, right? Another tab and doing something else while they listen to
what'd you say? What?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So, and I get it. You know, it's a challenge for all of us, right? In this world of this technological age, I think some of the things you got to do is you have to put aside the things that distract you, the phones, the other devices, and be able to lock into something, right? And that, of course, is something that you choose. It could be breathing. It could be some form of imagery or visualization that you're doing about your game or what you're going to do that day or past experiences. It could be on a mantra, right? Like, it's that kind of thing. But taking time, quiet time, to focus your mind is a good thing. We've heard of all the health benefits of it, first and foremost, you know, the lowering your stress, your anxiety, and what that does for your health. But you're starting to build the muscles when you do that of being able to focus on something in particular, right? One thing. And that's really important because when you play tennis, you got to focus on one particular thing while a lot of other things are going on, and that's the ball. And can you stay focused, or is your mind split? You know, you can be there and hitting balls, but your mind is on, you know, what you have to do for work or what someone said to you in the last changeover or a ball that you missed in the second game that now you're down a break. And these things, external and internal distractions, take away from that focus that you need to perform. So under pressure, especially because the distractions get louder, as we know. So to me, you know, a lot of it off the court, you can do mindfulness activities. You can do breathing, meditation, you know, and there's apps for these things that you can, like Headspace and Calm and other ones that you can practice this. You're building the muscle, if you do this regularly, to be able to focus. Now, a couple of the exercises I like most, particularly, we like to do things like box breathing, for example, or some people call it square breathing. If the listeners haven't heard of that, that's where you inhale through your nose, maybe to a count of four, and then you hold your breath to another count of four, and you exhale. It could be out through your nose or out through your mouth to a count of four. And then at the end of that exhale, you actually hold your breath again. So you're making the four parts of the breath with a breath hold at the top of the inhale and at the bottom of the exhale. You're holding your breath as well, and then you cycle that back over. This box breath really is useful in terms of grabbing your focus and putting it on your breath, because, you know, everybody likes to breathe, right? It's natural. And, you know, when you're underwater and you're swimming, a lot of your thoughts on what am I get to breathe again, right? And that's what happens in this box breathing. It really grabs your attention. You learn to manage your breath and be comfortable with that uncomfortable where you are holding your breath and hold your focus. That's one of my favorites. But what we also do, mindfulness activities where, you know, for example, we just have you be aware of your thoughts and not try to hang on to any of your thoughts. All right. So your thoughts are coming in, just kind of let them go. some players talk about swiping them away like they're on their phone, like, okay, that one's gone, that one's gone. When you find a thought is sticking around and it's hanging around, like, oh, I'm hungry, or man, I really kind of messed up that project, or I didn't perform well the other night. You have this thought hanging around and you can't swipe it away. This is where then you need to do your mental work. Maybe take a couple of deep breaths. You know, I like to think about like going deep into outer space, the dark, blank canvas of space and the quiet, the silence, to try to let that thought go. And you can work on sort of, again, doing the mental push-ups of, I got a thought that's hanging around that I can't let go of, but I can use this exercise to let it go and then move on, which again is incredibly important in life and in tennis. You can think about in tennis, if you double faulted at, 34 or 30 all, now it's 30, 40, can you let go? Well, the more you exercise these muscles off the court, you can then connect, for example, with your breath. Take a deep breath. Okay, I'm over it. I'm moving on. I'm good. And then focus on what you're going to do in the next point. If you go throughout your day and you're bouncing around from thing to thing to thing and never really focusing, hard to imagine in that moment that you're necessarily going to manage your focus very well. So there's holding your focus, which is important, but then, like I just mentioned, there's refocusing, which is absolutely the most important, because we're all going to be distracted. We all need to move on from things. You can practice both through some of those activities that I mentioned.
Yeah, I also tried the box breathing while you were chatting. Still listening to you, of course, but yeah, that is just very, very calming and, forced me to kind of pause and think for a bit. So I really love that one, actually. I feel like, you know, whenever you have a rough patch, or, you know, you make an error, just do a box breath and try to think. Although I guess, yeah, would that be kind of hard sometimes? Like if you have a really long point and your heart's pounding, to do that sort of breath, maybe you just do like one deep breath, or I don't know. What would you suggest?
Yeah, typically after a point, we'll suggest you just do sort of some deep breathing. Maybe you're inhaling to two and out to exhaling out to like four. Extending the exhale, because that relaxes you. If you find you can do the box breath, maybe it's more in a changeover. That can be very beneficial because it's going to reset your focus a little bit better. So when you think about these things, Mervin, there's certain skills that you use on the fly. That's kind of like my hockey term. Like you're on the fly, you're moving through, you got to go to the next point. So you're recovering. Maybe you can't do a box breath there, but you're going to do it in the changeover. But for now, I'm going to do some deep breathing, maybe, again, like I said, a two inhale, four exhale. So you're working on letting go, and hopefully you can work through that. But yes, box breathing can be a challenge when you're trying to recover. Now, again, I will say that if you you practice it, you get better at it, it gets easier to do. So, and maybe then you can do it in between points, a short one.
Gotcha. And then in terms of the self-talk, I have a couple questions around that. But I guess, you know, firstly, I was going to ask you for maybe like what are the like best phrases or something. But is that like very personal? Like, are there, you know, some phrases that will work better than others for people? Or are there just like universal ones that, you know, people can adopt and that would do well for them?
It's actually quite personal. But there are principles that you rely on. When you're talking about these self-talk phrases, these cues, there's a few things to look out for. Number one, it should be grounded in positive action. So instead of saying, don't miss, you say, hit with spin, right? What am I going to do? Because anytime you go into a point, you want to focus on what the action you're going to take. When you're trying to avoid something, typically your brain doesn't compute don't, it computes the action. So just, if I think don't miss, a lot of times immediately in my brain, I'm going to see myself missing. And now I've created this thought in my mind. But if I tell myself what I want to do, I can start to commit to an inaction, which is what we want when we finish our between points routine, that I'm committed to some purpose, some action, some game plan. So, you know, you want to focus your self-talk on positive action. You want a lot of your self-talk to really I think, link into your strengths. Okay. So, or the most important things. So for example, you know, I might say like, hey, like give your best effort. And for some people that might resonate with them, and others, it's like, well, what does that mean? Like, but if you say, hey, like go out and be physical, move, then they kind of are able to grab it. So the more specific you get, the more specific to their strengths or their goals for the match, these cues then start to take on, I think, more meaning with the player. But these are things that they're a collaboration to me. I'm not giving players cues. I'm not saying, hey, do it the way I would think, because I find that very ineffective. I've got to work with them to come up with the cues that will be effective for them. And again, they come up with stuff I'm like, wow, that's really cool. Like I hadn't thought of that. And there's some that are used a lot, you know, things like, you know, thinking of hitting the depth or spin or, you know, moving is a big one. Just moving, right? Moving your feet, being physical. That's an often used one. And so there are ones that are used a lot, but there's a lot of personal preference comes into this. And the more you're really focusing on positive action, the more specific you are to your goals, your game plan, your strengths, the more meaning it takes. And you want to keep it short and concise too. Because again, if you have a run-on sentence or a paragraph, how are you ever going to remember that during match play? So this is where this concept of chunking comes in, right? Like, so the idea is that certain words unlock other ideas, right? And they found this in the work when they studied the famous coach John Wooden, right, at UCLA basketball. He would say certain words and it would mean a whole lot of things to his players because they had worked through it, right? They'd been taught what it means. And so if you as the coach, you're saying, hey, be aggressive, what meaning does it have? That might mean a number of different things, like, oh, that means I need to come to the net more. That might mean I need to accelerate. That might mean that I need to look for short balls, right? That might mean I need to go out wider, right? It can mean a lot of different things to a player. Aggress with your feet, aggress with your strokes, aggress with your mind. So we got to define these things, and the more that you can get to the simple words that have meaning to them, but you got to work it out, because I've experienced this too as a mental coach. You're talking about being aggressive and they're thinking that means take a lot of risk. That's not what we meant. We didn't mean hit for the lines, but that has to be clarified, right? But these chunk words, there are certain words that have a lot of meaning that mean a lot of other things. And if you can figure out what those are in your tennis, and you usually do that with your coach, because your coach has a philosophy or should have a philosophy, and they're teaching certain concepts, certain cues that can have a lot of meaning, you know? And so again, aggression is one that's often used, you know, being physical. What does that mean? That could mean bending your knees. That could mean moving your feet, a certain type of footwork. It can mean a lot of different things, right? So, so these meaningful words can chunk a lot of ideas into them is what you're getting at with that. So,
yeah, Larry. And so I guess it seems like, you know, the self-talk, it's much better when it's like an actual, like concrete action. Like I was wondering if, you know, more primal ones, emotional ones, like, let's win the match or let's destroy him or something like that. Like, is that too emotional? I mean, is there ever a place for that? Like maybe if you have low energy and you just like, I don't know. Like,
yeah, it's a good question. I think first you got to know yourself, right? What works for you? Cause for some people they go there and then they just get way too high on the intensity energy scale and then they have anxiety. So you got to be careful with that. But when you're talking about these self-talk cues and phrases, there are ones that are more information-based, right? Like, go to the net. And they're more of the sort of emotional encouragement type ones, right? Like, hey, let's go. You got this, right? They're both good. And in conjunction, they're probably very good, right? Like, hey, you got this. Get to the net. But you have to know your player, right? Because again, you know, we were at a match. When I say we, as me and the team were at a match of a player the other day. And we were sitting on the sideline. It was a long three-setter. And, you know, there was a lot of emotion. And we were talking on the sideline as match was going on. Like, here's a time where we're not going to insert more emotion because the player is already emotional, right? Very intense. And emotions are kind of going up and down. We got to present a lot of calm at this point. Like, hey, you got this. And just kind of an easy clap. Versus, you know, again, like you said, maybe the energy is dropping. So, hey, come on, let's go. You got this. You got to get to the net or whatever, you know. But you have to read the person. You got to read the situation. But in general, again, these self-talk cues, the more specific they are to a task or an action, that helps the player focus in the present. But also, you can have the encouraging ones, the emotion-filled ones, the ones that push you. And what we haven't even talked about is sometimes you challenge yourself, right? Like, hey, you need to pick it up, right? And that's okay too, especially if you're not doing what you need to do. But it's the way that you do it. If you're doing with a command, we'll say, pick it up now, let's go. That's better than, you know, come on, you always do this. You got to pick it up. What's wrong with you? The way you do it really matters, and this command voice, succinct, to the point, draws you back into action and being willing to act versus sort of more what sounds whiny or complaining. Or so there's a lot of different facets to it. You have to think about what you're saying, but also how you're saying it, and then when you say it, and you have to consider all those pieces. But to keep it simple, you know, again, what I tell players, especially at first, come up with a couple goals that are really keys for you to play well in your match. Let those be your cues, right? So if one of your keys is to get to the net, remind yourself some phrase, some cue around that, like, hey, move forward, that focuses you on a goal that you think is going to make you successful. That's a good home base for your self-talk. And then you kind of start working from there. So,
gotcha. And you know, with the third step, goals to set, it almost seems like kind of intertwined in a sense with like the self-talk, I guess. So I don't know, would you differentiate that in any way? Is that like maybe something that you do like before the match? I guess probably you set a yeah. goal and yeah. Okay.
Gotcha. Yeah. And it certainly is, because the goals are essentially, they are thoughts, right? They're representations in the mind of something we're trying to achieve. We like to really center the focus on the process, like I mentioned before, things you have control over, how you're going to compete, how you're going to play. And these goals for a pro player, they might be set days in advance of the match, of a tournament, because they're preparing, right? Their whole life is predicated on preparing for tournaments. For someone who has a job other than tennis, and they're coming to their match and wanting to get themselves mentally ready, still not a bad idea to take down a piece of paper and write down a couple process goals. You know, I really want to hit out on my second serve with more spin. Okay. Get that in your mind. That can help you sort of alleviate, you know, worries and doubts, because you're putting things more under your control. But really, a lot of that stuff, you know, the 30 minutes, the hour before you play, just lock into, this is what I want to do. This is important to me. If I do these things, win or lose, I'm going to feel good about myself. It's not based on just the outcome. But the goals drive the mindset, right? And that's really kind of the lens at which we see our match. So if I go into the match, like, I need to win, we need to win this, we move on to the next round. Okay, that's the lens I'm carrying in. What happens when you get down a break early in the first set? Are you starting to pull the chute and start to make excuses? Are you really getting down on yourself or your teammates? How are you going to respond when it's all about that zero-sum game of win-lose versus, hey, you know, if I if I put the emphasis on how tough I am and how I'm focused every point and always running and competing, I can still do that in my mind, right? I can still do that. So that's driving the focus. That's driving the self-talk as I play, that these goals are that, hey, that's achievable. If I'm down 1-5, I need to win doesn't feel that achievable anymore. And so then these other more ineffective responses have a good opportunity to come in. So the goals really drive the mindset, as do your expectations as well. And those things are different. Goals are things that you're striving for that you may or may not reach, and that's fine. Your expectations are things that should happen, right? Things that you should do, like treating your doubles partner with respect. Okay, I'm going to make sure I do that. That's under my control. Okay. Executing my forehand to their backhand as much as I can, that's only partially under my control. That's a good goal. That could help me win this match. I'm going to focus on that. But I got to understand, I'm not going to be perfect with that either. Expectations, goals, get them clear in your mind. That helps you really kind of clarify and put the right lens around your match where you can see it in realistic ways, right? In effective ways, you know. But if we carry into the match like, oh, hey, you know, you can't miss against this guy. You cannot miss. What happens after your third miss? Oh, I'm going to lose. I'm not playing well. I'm missing. What's wrong with me? Versus like, hey, you've got to really make sure you're putting the ball in play with depth against this guy. So when you miss, it's like, hey, put the ball in play with depth versus you can't miss. Well, you just did. How are you going to work that out under pressure? So,
witness history at Roland Garros, where old rivalries meet new talent on the clay battleground. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV live in HD. Experience 3 weeks of unparalleled access as the world's top players in tennis face off to see if the veterans maintain their dominance or if a fresh face rises to challenge them. Daily live coverage begins Monday, May 20th. Stream it now with Tennis Channel Plus to be there when it happens.
Yeah, Larry, great stuff. And so I guess, you know, a lot of players, you know, probably everybody, you've got the framework, let's say the awareness and mental skill set, you've been working on that, and you know, you've got a good goal that's, you know, that you've said before the match. But then, you know, it comes to crunch time and all of a sudden, you know, it's like 6-all, you know, 3-4 in the tiebreak. And then, you know, invariably, like you start thinking about the result and you feel nervous, you feel tight. I mean, what is the routine there? I mean, do we go back to kind of the, you know, the focus sort of branch of it where, you know, or the refocusing rather, where we like do the breathing, like what, you know, it's almost inevitable. And I hear even like the pros still feel this. So what do you do in these situations?
Yeah. Think about what they do in basketball, right? A free throw shooter in a big situation is going to use the routine that he or she would use throughout the game. Right? They're not going to do anything special, super extra, like, oh, this is important now, so I need to, you know, dribble between my legs 3 times and spin it and then say something and then shoot, because you're going to be out of rhythm, right? And a lot of tennis is actually keeping rhythm, feeling a sense of rhythm and moving forward. And so whatever routine you're doing, you want to have a home-based routine. We call them our green light routine. That's basically green light when you're driving means keep going. And that's what we want to have in place throughout our matches, because then it creates a rhythm, it creates a comfort in getting ready. It also trains the brain to be ready to play, right? Because there's a certain series of things that are happening. The brain's like, okay, I know that I'm about to play a point here. I need to be ready. I need to be alert, focused externally. If we don't have a routine, a bunch of random stuff happens. Our brain can be distracted and all over the place. So whatever routine you're using, you should use it throughout the match. That's the first point. And you should use it in practice so that you get comfortable with it. Because you don't want these pressure moments to feel so big and so different that they do lock you up, right? Why wouldn't they if this is, you know, so important? This is the point of the match. Well, it's another point in the match. Yeah, it feels important, but I got here because I did all these other points. So you got to be able to put it in its place by following your routines. That brings a sense of comfort. Now, the routines, I mean, people will do different things, but there is a flow to this that is sort of, you know, there's an immediate response after the last point is played, positive, negative, or neutral. Typically, pros are neutral, especially under pressure. They're just going to even keel, take their breaths, move through the routines, walk to the back, take a little bit of time. Maybe they're going to towel off. This is their process of recovering. They're taking deep breaths, which allows them to clear their mind so then they can refocus on what's my plan for the next point. And that's the thing I think people don't realize with pros is they're very purposeful about each point. There's a plan. Now, the plan doesn't always work out because tennis is a game of chaos, to be honest. There's so many things that can happen, but they have a plan and then they go to enact that. And once you make that commitment to that plan, that tends to quiet a lot of things down. Like, yeah, whatever's going on around me, I know I'm going to hit this serve wide and I'm going to go open court. I can do that. I practice that every time I go into court, I practice. I can do this, or I can hit this target with my serve. Great. That gives you a sense of commitment that helps things quiet down, helps you focus. And then you go through the final rituals that we all see, right? Bouncing around, bouncing the ball three times every time, taking a breath, going, you know, having that rhythm with your serve. Going through this sort of regular routine allows your brain to lock in, to let go of the distractions, the noise, the worries, the doubts. And if you find that that regular green light routine isn't working for you, you're still worried, you're still thinking about the 30-15 point that you missed, then you take a little bit extra time to do a little bit more work, right? Maybe you do a box breath there if you can, like we talked about earlier, right? Maybe you do a little bit more specific visualization between points. I'm going to imagine myself really hitting that forehand well out to the back, and I can see it, I can feel it, boom, I got this. So I need to do a little bit more visualization here to lock that in. Maybe I'm doing shadow swings. You see a lot of pros will do that, and they're focusing on the feel of hitting a good ball. You do a little bit more, but you circle right back into your routine, right? So you go back to your rituals, you bounce the ball, you're bouncing your toes, you do whatever you normally do to get yourself ready. So that's what we call our yellow light routine. Driving, obviously, yellow light means slow down. Doesn't mean speed up, everyone. It means slow down. You got a decision to make. Are you going to go through this intersection? Are you not? In tennis, yellow light means, hey, there's something up. Not quite where I want my focus to be, so I'm going to get it to where I want it to be. I'm going to get back into my green light. It doesn't mean panic. We were just in Sarasota this week, and that was one of the great reminders at the Sarasota Open is that the players that are usually successful are the ones that do not panic when things aren't going their way. They just even keel. They go about their business. They know that there's going to be these moments, but they are going to keep doing what they do, and they're going to stay with it. But those routines also, Mervin, they allow you that work that you do in practice, for example. So if you're doing breathing, that gives you a place to insert it in the match, right? So now I know where to breathe. I'm going to take a deep breath after the point ends. I'm going to take a deep breath before I start the points. Let's go, right? So you bring the breathing you're exercising into the match. Or maybe it's a yellow light, you want to do more box breathing. Well, I'd practice that. So I know how to do that. And I know when I do box breathing, I tend to focus well. That's a good feeling under pressure. So your routines also give you a structure, a home for putting things into the match. Otherwise, imagine what your mind is like without structure. It's all over the place. This allows the worries, the doubts, the fears, the distractions to take root, to take over for no other reason than you just haven't organized your mind. That's all. And if you can do that and you can practice it, you can work through these moments. Again, that structure might look slightly different depending on the person, but that flow of things, those four R's, how are you responding to the last point? How are you recovering? How are you refocusing? And how are you getting yourself ready with your rituals? That's there for everybody. That's there. That was there in the 16-second cure that Jim Lehrer came up with. That's embedded in that flow, right? That there are stages that we go through between points. You master that, you can master the moment. because you're training your brain to be able to play the point, refocus, and lock back in.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting. That's, you know, I mean, you have a solution right here, you know, that Larry mentioned, is just really having that, you know, green light routine. And then, you know, if times are a bit tougher, I guess, so to speak, then you add a couple more things, you know, yellow lights routine. So I guess for those, and obviously we've mentioned some, but for those who maybe are really new to having any sort of routine in between points, we mentioned the breath, but what's maybe just a very simple one that you would recommend that beginners start out with?
Yeah, that's a great question. How do you get started? You know, because you don't start with a pro's routine, because you're not going to remember it. You're not going to have the discipline to do it. You start simple. You choose one or two things, right? That's how we want to do these things. Now, maybe you have something you always do between points now. Maybe you always, let's say, take a couple bounces before you go to serve and return. Okay, that's great that you have that. That's getting your feet ready to go. That's reminding yourself to move. That's a good behavioral piece in the routine. But if you can connect something to that, right? So I'm going to do my bounces, but right before that, I'm going to remind myself of my cue. Oh, hey, heavy to her backhand. Boom, 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 boom. I do my bounces. That gets me ready to play. So now we call this coupling, right? So a habit that's already in place, you can attach another behavior to it, and it's more likely that you'll turn that behavior into a habit as well. So we want to use this concept of coupling to add to our routines, but you start out simple, one or two things. That's why I like to teach Breathe and Believe, Mervin. I like to start out with, hey, just take a breath, something simple, one of those cues or something your coach would tell you. That's what we teach at the youngest ages, right? Because you don't start out with these elaborate between point routines, because they're just not going to do them. They're going to remember them, let alone want to do them. So you start simple, one or two things. Again, people are different. I like to start with take a breath, say one thing right now that's going to help you get to work. A lot of people start with the ritualistic end of it, right? Like, okay, I'm going to sway back and forth before I return and I get into my stance. That's great. That's a good start. Have your ritualistic things you do that give you rhythm going into the point on your return and your serve. You can start there. You can start anywhere. But what I will say is that getting ready to play can break down also anywhere in that process. So if you have 25 seconds to get ready to play, it could be that the first second is costing you the next point. So if you're following what I'm saying, is that if the point ends and I'm like, oh my God, I can't make a serve. Now, what do you do to get yourself ready? And maybe you have some routines, but are you able to manage that reaction, right? So eventually you do need to get to a point where good body language, good breathing to recover, walk behind a baseline, however you want to do that. Pick a plan. Can be very simple. Remind yourself who cue. Can be more complex, like what a pro would have, like a serve plus one or plus two, and then go through your final rituals. You want to eventually get yourself to that, because that's the most effective way, one of the most effective ways to get yourself ready to play. But you start by doing one thing, and then you scaffold upon that. So again, if you're looking for the cookie cutter approach, like Larry, just tell me what to do already. Stop babbling. I would say, hey, start out just by really having good body language as the point ends and just walking away from the point. Start there. Go to your strengths. And then you can build upon that. Because if you're not reacting to the last point, probably have a good chance that you can get yourself ready to play for the next point.
So, Larry, you know, obviously, even if we, you know, do all these things, try our best, you know, there could be patches where we get unlucky, or we just playing against juggernauts, however it is. And then, you know, we sustain, you know, a few losses in a row or many losses. So in that, you know, in that vein, I want to ask you about, you know, resilience, bouncing back. Like, what sorts of things do you do to help yourself so that you don't feel like, oh, I keep, you know, losing every time or losing close matches, I mean, is it like similar practices off court, or like how would you handle these situations?
Yeah, well, you know, resilience is a lot of what we've already talked about, right? Because the first thing about resilience is that you have to have adversity to be resilient, right? And we've talked a lot about patches where you're not playing well, or maybe you've lost, right? And how you're going to deal with your loss. So first things first is there has to be adversity, and you want to have particular perspectives about adversity. You know, that, hey, we bounce back when something doesn't go our way. I remember playing a tournament with my friend when we lived in Michigan, and that for the whole tournament, that was our phrase. We're bouncing back. We weren't going to let any error that we made in this doubles tournament keep us down. And we ended up playing really well. I think we made the final of that tournament. We were going to keep bouncing back. And so there's got to be a perspective, right, about adversity. Like, okay, first, it exists. Secondly, that's not that big of a problem because it exists for everybody, right? Everybody has adversity in their lives and in their tennis. So what are we getting so worked up about it for, right? Like, it's not that big a deal, to be honest. We can deal with this. And then, like I said earlier, secondly, if you have the skill sets, like we've worked through some of those today with the self-talk and the breathing, if you're practicing these things and then you engage with them in those moments, you can then quiet the noise, quiet all the doubts, the fears, the worries. That's the thing about resilience. People who are resilient, they aren't fearless. They have fears. They have doubts, but they manage them well. They put them in their place. Like, oh, okay, you know, I accept that I can have this, but that's not real to me. Like, I can serve. There's nothing wrong with my serve. I'm good, right? They can go through that process and then go play. The person who isn't being resilient, they're fragile. What happens in many cases is that they get to that point where they double fault a couple times, and they hang on to that thought of, I can't serve. I'm going to double fault again. I'm going to lose. And they can't get over the hump on that because they believe in it. But your mind's just telling you something that honestly isn't real. But the more that you have these skills where you can discipline your mind, where you can work through these things, you then can come out the other side of this in a better place. So you really have to, I think, almost embrace adversity. Rafa does this well, right? He talks about the fight and the back and forth. Almost embrace it. Not everybody's going to be there. I don't expect people listening or watching this tomorrow to be, oh yeah, I love it when I double fault. That's not what I'm talking about. But embrace the reality that tennis is messy. It's up and down. That's normal. When you have a good competitive match, sometimes it feels like you're not doing well because your opponent's good. This is normal. Accepting, having this good perspective on adversity and resilience, using your skills and bringing them into your between points routines, right? Bring them in, like we've talked about. And then, you know, when it comes to things like losing, or maybe you do have people there watching you, you have your teammates, using your support sources. You know, when you're out there, you got a doubles partner, it's often easier because you can support one another. What if you're playing singles? Well, you can look to your teammate on the other court, right? Be like, encourage them, and maybe they'll encourage you back, right? So you can do stuff like that to try to get some good self-talk and some good talk going. So you really have these three pillars when it comes to resilience, and that is you got to have a good perspective on adversity because it's going to happen. So it is what it is, and we're going to deal with it. Secondly, you got to have the skill sets to deal with it. And third, you really got to have the support in place that allows you to be resilient. Now this gets, we talk about that third piece a lot, Mervin, when we start talking about juniors and parents and coaches and whatnot, but nonetheless, we all don't want to kind of worry alone. So if you are struggling, you're nervous, you're worried about how you're going to perform, talk to a friend. Talk to your coach if you have a coach. Get it out. Share it. That vulnerability makes you stronger because you can get it out. You can let it go. Then you can start to refocus on what you will do in the match, what you have control over. So to me, you know, the resilience, we use a lot of the same skills that we've been talking about throughout this webinar, but it really is all cast in this context of something hasn't gone my way. how am I going to deal with that? And the more that you embrace that that's just how the world is, and you're good with it, and you can come back from it, and you have before, and you will again, and you know how to do it, really good, right? That's going to help you get through those moments. And then you just feed those kind of ideas into your routines, into your between points, into your changeover routines. You know, you're in the changeover. You're thinking back to times that you fought your way back when you were down, right? I'm sure a lot of people listening to this right now have had times where they lost, or excuse me, they were losing, and they come back and won. And then for the next couple of weeks, they're like, I can't lose anyway. I can always find a way. You have that confidence now that you can find a way to come back. That's in everybody. It's there. Everybody can be resilient. But you're not going to win every time. Just not going to happen. It's really about the way you do things. Are you being competitive? Are you focused? Are you giving your best effort? You do that, you give yourself the best chance, and then we see where it goes.
Yeah, I love that. And so I imagine that, you know, a lot of the principles you just talked about apply to this question, but, you know, you obviously have players who are perfectionists, you know, maybe they just like in their everyday life as well, like they, you know, think that they rarely make any mistakes or whatnot, or they never want to make one. So, I mean, how do you shift the mindset for these sorts of players in tennis, at least, to help them?
Yeah, this is a challenging one because these are really kind of set strongly from a young age many times, or it's a part of their personality. And so you have to understand, for the perfectionist, this person who everything's got to just be right, or it's bad, it's failure, you know, Where is that coming from? Why are you putting such rigid standards on yourself? Because it may be that they believe that these high standards, that's the only thing that matters. Like if you drop below that, then you're bad. You're awful. You're a bad person. You're a bad tennis player. There's people who believe that, and that takes a lot of toll on them personally. So, you know, being able to separate your performances from your own self-worth is very important, who you are as a person. You know, just because you lost the match that you're winning doesn't make you a bad person, certainly doesn't make you a bad tennis player, because it happens every day on the tour. So, you know, the best it happens to as well. So, but that's hard for perfectionists because, again, they have these rigid standards of this is the way it should be, and if it's not this, it's bad. And that has its effects, right? Because now as I'm playing, if I'm not meeting the standard, I tend to get negative pretty quickly. I'll tend to get emotional pretty quickly. I might, as I say, pull the chute quickly, right? Like I'm out of here. I'm making excuses pretty quickly. Like, oh, the balls are terrible. These courts are bad. Because it hurts so much to be losing and not playing well. It really hurts that badly. And you have to change the way you look at success and failure. You need to be more flexible. You got to understand that you're not perfect. I'm not perfect. And the reality is that tennis is a game of errors. That's why they have these two stats, unforced errors and forced errors. We got a lot of things go around on errors, right? And oftentimes, like we're in the clay court part of the pro season now, you're going to make more errors than you hit winners and you still win the match. You know, and then the other thing you got to wrestle your mind with is that, you know, the pros, they might win 53, 54% of their points, and they're winning by a break or two. But they're only winning a couple more points than their opponent. It's not like they're winning 24 points and their opponent's winning two, right? So I think we get these ideas in our mind that there's a way that it should be, and we can't get outside of that. The reality is there is no should be. There just is. This is the way that it is. Today, I'm going to have to work a little harder. Maybe I'm not seeing the ball as well. Maybe my opponent has a really good strategy against me. Maybe the wind is knocking my ball down, right? I'm not able to get it through the court as well. There's a million different things that go on a tennis match that make it imperfect. And you, as a perfectionist, you got to come to terms with that. It's okay. Like, you missed that, the concept of the good miss. I'm sure you've heard of that, right? Like, that was a good miss. Like, you went for it. It was the right decision. Well done. Like, that's awful. I missed it.
You can't miss that. Why not? I've seen Federer miss. Like, if he misses, you can surely miss. So you really have to, as a coach, as a parent, have a lot of patience, first of all, but also help them start to challenge and counter some of these thoughts that are irrational, that I should always make that ball. You might make that ball 95% of the time, but that was one of those 5%, and it's okay. It happens. You know, that builds in the resilience if you can start to think that way. So perfectionists, if they're a strong perfectionist, a lot of times they're not very resilient, because if I'm making mistakes, if I'm losing, that's bad. It's not what it should be. And that undermines that resilient response we're looking for. So we really have to change the way we're looking at things. Now, I like to do this through games too, right? So like if you're playing games in practice where you reward them, not for playing perfectly, but for the way they go about things. So on our podcast, Compete Like a Champion, we're about to put out there this skill drill on the bounce back game, where if you get broken, now the alternative scoring starts. So you're playing games, you're playing sets. When you get broken, you have the opportunity to get 2 points on the next point. So if you can win the next point, you get 2 points, but you're going to have to refocus to do that, right? You're going to have to bounce back. And if you win the next game, you can then get the next point on your serve to 15 love without having to do anything. So we're trying to reward the process of coming back. Now, in that case, we reward it through an outcome. We have an alternate version of that where, okay, we're going to reward you for the way you do things. So let's say you get broken. You come back on the next point. You're hustling and you're being physical. You're playing with spin and depth. And you're doing everything your coach is teaching you to do. Boom, I'm going to give you that point. Or I'm going to give you a mulligan, because you know what? You get to play that one because you did the right thing. Again, you don't do this all the time, because the reality is you have to play with real scoring and deal with it. But when you have players who are struggling with perfectionism, you want to reward a different response in practice at times. Rewarding them for the way they do things versus the outcome, because that just totally the outcome reinforces that perfectionistic mindset a lot of times where, you know what, it's an end game. Either I won the point or I lost the point. I win the point, I'm good. I lost the point, I'm bad. No, let's change the focus on this. Let's put it on the way you're doing things.
Love that, Larry. You covered a lot of awesome information today. Just want to ask, you know, if is there anywhere that, you know, you might want the audience to follow you or USA, or, you know, any links or profiles you want to shout out?
For sure. Well, we have, I mentioned our Compete Like a Champion podcast with Coach Johnny Parks. You can find that on really any place that you can subscribe to podcasts. So we're out there, as you know, Mervin. You know, the other place to look is on our USTA player development website. You can also, you know, I'm on Twitter at Larry Lauer. You know, I don't do a lot of talking on Twitter. I tend to maybe retweet things that I think are useful to people that they might want to read. But I would say that Compete Like a Champion is a good podcast to subscribe to. You get a lot of these ideas. And then for those watching who are parents of tennis players, we're doing a whole series of webinars around tournaments and competition and how you can make these great experiences for children and for young players. So you can find that on our USTA website as well. You know, so these tournament competition webinars. And if you can't find that, then you can tweet me and say, hey, where does that exist, Larry? And I'll forward it your way. But yeah, so we're trying to put a lot of good information out there. The USTA Skills and Drills handbook, Mental Skills and Drills handbook, is out there. You can get it on Amazon, Coach's Choice. So if you want, you know, that actually is now 13 years old, believe it or not, which really makes me feel old today. But, you know, so that, I don't know when the revision of that one's coming. I need some help, but we have that out there as well. There's a lot of good stuff in there still. So there's a lot of resources. To me, though, the key is choosing a plan and then just training it, planning it. That's the key to me, like building those reps for whatever you decide to do, because those are the things that will come out under pressure. The things that are trained, the things that are habits come out under pressure. And if you're training the wrong habits, guess what? Those come out under pressure too. So if you're training, getting upset at yourself, making excuses, going away, guess what's going to happen in your matches? Same thing, right? Now, it's not a one for one, Mervin. It's not like I get upset at work and therefore I get upset in tennis. But those things definitely, there's a correlation, because it's all about you as a human being. How are you dealing with the pressure? How are you dealing with the adversity in the moment, right? And if you look forward to it and you want it because you know good things can happen, then you got a shot, I think, to start to be the kind of player you want to be under pressure.
Awesome, Larry. What a great close. Really appreciate that. A lot of wise words. So I definitely highly encourage everybody to check out the Compete Like a Champion podcast with Larry and Johnny. I've tuned in. It's fantastic stuff.
Thank you.
And yeah, of course. Yeah, and USA Player Development. And you can tweet Larry if you enjoyed this presentation as well.
Send me a tweet, yeah.
Yeah. Yes. So, yeah, it's great stuff. And also, yeah, we'll have all the links that Larry mentioned, including the USCA Mental Skills and Drills Handbook, and the webinars for parents as well. You know, we'll find that and link that below too. So, Dr. Lauer, thanks so much for coming on to the podcast. Really, the summit. I'm so used to saying podcast, not summit. And, I really appreciate you taking the time. I told Larry, I said, oh yeah, you know, maybe half an hour, and we're up to like an hour, but
this is what happens when you and I get going. It always goes, but we have fun with it, so it's okay.
Exactly. Yeah. Have fun and, you know, highly, just not entertaining, this really useful stuff, but also entertaining as well. But, yeah, I can't wait to really put this in practice. You know, I do put some of it into practice already, but keeping, you know, that framework in mind of the awareness and developing mental strength, and then, you know, the goals as well. And then, you know, if you have that consistent, you know, green light routine and add the yellow light routine, if you need to, then you're going to be in great shape and really improve in these critical moments. So thanks a lot, Larry, for coming on. And I can't wait to speak with you again next time.
Appreciate it. Really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thanks.
All right. I really hope that you enjoyed my interview with Dr. Larry Lauer. Thank you to Dr. Lauer for being so gracious with his time. And if you did enjoy this episode and got value from it, then I would highly appreciate it if you would leave a review for the Tennis Files podcast, which you can do at tennisfiles.com/Apple Podcasts. And that would be super helpful just to give the show more visibility to others. You know, the more reviews that we get, the higher that the Apple Podcasts wizardry and magic, you know, the algorithm pushes the show up higher up the charts. So definitely would help a lot with that. Thank you in advance if you haven't yet. And also want to leave you with a quote, as I do at the end of every show. And this one is by Vera Wang. And Vera said, "Success isn't about the end result. It's about what you learn along the way." Certainly a great philosophy to behold, and just to focus more on the process rather than the results, as my college coach taught me after I lost a match in which I was winning hugely, some may say bigly. but anyways, yeah, I hope you enjoyed this episode and have a great one. And we'll see you on the next episode of the Tennis Files podcast. This is your host, Mirbon, signing out.
Thanks for listening to the Tennis Files podcast. For more tips to help you improve your tennis game, visit tennisfiles.com.